welcome to Tuesday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, co-hosting with Melody Cederstrom, who will be with us shortly. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Now, for the next hour, Melody and I will be bringing you our opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day. Today is Tuesday, August 24, 2021. Melody, are you here?
I am.
Hello.
I'm still doing it by telephone. I had to order some equipment, and it should be here this week. So, yes, thank you for opening the program for me, Dave.
My pleasure. Closing in the New York spot aftermarket at 18.04.70. That's down about $1.80. Silver actually up 24 cents, a little over 1%, to close at 23.97. Platinum down $6 at 1,018, and palladium rebounding a good bit, 3% today, up $72 to finish at 2,552. Let's jump to the bond market, where most Treasury yields were up today. The bellwether 10-year up 0.04 to close at 1.295%. The 2-year yield is the only one down actually 0.02 of a point to close at 0.224. And the long-term 30-year note up 0.038 to close at 1.91%. Now, all the while, the dollar index falling about 0.08 to 92.88. Now, in the commodities markets, oil, West Texas, let's see, up $2 today, close at $67.64. And let's see, what else? The good old paper markets, all three markets closed up. The Dow Jones up 30 and change to close at 35,366. Broader market S&P 500 up $6.70 to close at 4,486. And the tech-heavy NASDAQ up 77. To close at 15,019.80. And we'll call that a day, ladies and gentlemen. All the other international indexes also up today. And that is today's market report by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Melody.
Yes. I am here again.
Hi there.
Don't you love these live broadcasts? Boy, I'll tell you. Sometimes things happen, and there's no way of getting around it. So it's just
gives you an appreciation for these primetime live programs that really go off without a hitch. Of course, they're the ones that have been on 20, 30, 40, and 50 years.
Especially when you have a watchdog named Ruby.
Oh, my gosh. That'll do it every time.
But anyway, let's get on with the news. We have the Fed report shows some rise in manufacturing. I thought just last week, Dave, we talked about that their manufacturing was a little to the negative side.
Well, that was another region. That was the Philly region. This is the Richmond region.
Oh, yes. Like, it really makes a lot of difference, doesn't it? But, you know, because you wonder, well, what's different in these states compared to Philly? You would think Philly would, you know, certainly have a little bit better. But the composite index rose from 10 in July to 18 in August. It was all three components: shipments, new orders, and employment increased. The index for local business conditions also rose, and many firms reported increased capital expenditures. And naturally, you know, your manufacturers are optimistic. There's $5 trillion beginning to float around here pretty soon. So, yeah, who wouldn't be optimistic, thinking that you're going to get a little part of that money coming in? But anyway, survey respondents expected employment wages to rise, and we're still having difficulty in finding workers. They expect that to continue here in the next coming months. The average growth rates of both prices paid and prices reviewed by survey participants increased in August. And what else was in that great manufacturing report, Dave?
Well, we're seeing once again it's taking longer for businesses to get stuff delivered from their suppliers. Good old supply chain. On the one hand, these delays are known to fan inflation as sellers get buyers to pay higher prices for a smaller number of available goods. On the other hand, these delays also reflect that the demand for goods remains pretty strong, which usually is a bullish sign for an economy. Now, average supplier delivery times have lengthened to record levels going back to 2007. That's according to an IHS Market Purchasing Managers Index report out yesterday. And that sends mixed signals because when supplier delivery times get a lot longer, that's not a good thing. It means that the consumer dollars aren't being spent because products aren't getting to their destination where they can be bought. Well, this PMI report also shows that manufacturing growth slowed to a four-month low and services growth decelerated to an eight-month low. In addition to these long delivery times, the report showed that new orders were outpacing manufacturing output at a pace not seen before the pandemic. And again, another recipe for higher prices. Not surprisingly, therefore, prices charged by U.S. producers rose at a new record high rate in August and look set to rise further in September, given that material and labor shortages show no signs of moderating, Melody.
Headline news, sales of new homes rose to a modest 1% in July, reversing three straight months of declines. But it was still under everyone's expectations. They were looking for like a 2.7% increase. So the July increase left sales at a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 708,000. And this all comes out from the Commerce Department. We saw sales fall in April, May, and June. And as we've been talking about, home prices have soared over the past year. Did push some prospective homeowners out of the market. And again, the median price of a new home sold in July was $390,000, $400,000 basically, up almost 20% from a year ago. This is your median. It's where are people getting the money?
Must be all that. Stimulus money they saved last year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that whole, $1,400 or so? Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. Anyway, it's just shocking. The National Association of Realtors reported yesterday that sales of existing homes rose 2% in July compared to June, Dave.
Well, you raise a good point, Melody, the $390,000 median price. I mean, it's impressive for home builders and other sellers, but it's also hidden underneath. It's actually not so hidden when you read between the lines that's good for people buying at the particularly the upper end of the housing market. For those looking for entry-level homes, not so much. Now, the number of homes, again, available for sale is rising, which is good news for those buyers who had been getting priced out of the market. But for those at the entry level, especially where inventory is low, and it's low all over, it's not so good news. I mean, this was the sixth straight month of inventory increases in terms of total housing inventory. Now 28% higher from its February low of 1 million, although that's still down 12% from the 1.5 million a year ago in the height of the pandemic. And again, conditions aren't even across the market. ADP chief economist Neil Richardson says that the current dearth of inventory is worse in the affordable segment of the housing market, where many first-time buyers who tend to drive the housing market are looking. Another one, an Oxford economics economist, Nancy Vanden Houten, believes that going forward, the market for existing homes will be supported by strong demand and mortgage rates that remain historically low. So we'll see. Once again, we're seeing different numbers depending on where in the spectrum you're looking to buy.
Yeah. And this is kind of interesting. Walmart says it's going to start commercializing its delivery service using contract workers, autonomous vehicles, and drones, okay, to deliver other retailers' products directly to their customers' homes as fast as a few hours.
Amazon, they're coming for you.
So it seems like they're going to be starting up a FedEx or a UPS, a separate delivery system.
Competing with Amazon.
Pardon?
I think that's the real motive. They're competing with Amazon.
Pretty much. I mean, I don't see any Amazon's trucks floating around for delivery, maybe in the larger cities, you will. I don't know. Do you see anywhere you're at, Dave?
Sure do. Up and down the streets a couple times a day. Not
what,
certainly
an Amazon
it's not Christmas
delivery
season.
Truck?
Yes.
Really?
Yep. Yeah,
it's, all I mean, it's is FedEx and UPS. So, But now Walmart, they've launched their delivery and express delivery for shoppers 3 years ago on more than 160,000 items from more than 3,000 Walmart stores. So basically, they reached about 70% of the U.S. population. Now, the nation's largest retailer, we know, they want to tap into its ties with local communities, particularly businesses in rural areas. And the strategy announced today, will pit Walmart against the likes of Uber, DoorDash, and, as you mentioned, Dave, Amazon. And so it's, you know what, it's just amazing. I mean, there's just going to be, two stores that control everything.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty scary, actually.
And they're both tied into all the government. You have Amazon that, you know, gets all those government contracts. I mean, Walmart's been the government's grocery store for years and years. I don't know. It's just strange times, and it will be interesting to see how it goes. House Democrat leaders are trying to make their best to get their little million dollar budget. They worked overnight to ease an intra-party showdown with both moderate and progressive members that risks upending their domestic infrastructure agenda. I wish they would take the word infrastructure, because most of it does not go to infrastructure. But, hey, everybody likes the word infrastructure. That's what gets things done, is how it's tied to a particular phrase, or that makes you all warm and fuzzy inside. You'll vote for that more than if you were actually knowing what it all gets spent on. And so, you know, this is, they're supposedly supposedly up there trying to get it done, and they will, Dave. I mean, this is all theatrics. All theatrics. Irritating.
Well,
what say you?
It is interesting. Apparently, Nancy Pelosi did agree with this group of 9 moderate Democrats who were withholding their support for either of the, we'll call it the infrastructure package. But Pelosi, in negotiations that ended earlier this afternoon, agreed to a drop-dead date. I believe it might be the end of September when, if the $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation package isn't ready to go, then Pelosi is committed to bringing the smaller bipartisan bill up for an immediate vote at that time. So I guess that's appeasing one group now. It'll be interesting to see what her progressive holdouts are going to demand on the other side of that. Are they going to say, well, if you give that a drop dead date of September 28th, we want our package done by October 1st, you know, whatever. There's always, as you call it, Melody, some level of high theatrics going on in Washington. So we'll see what happens.
You know, yeah, they have to make everybody think that they're working hard. You know, it's just disgusting. It truly, truly is. You know, and some of that money that's being spent, I mean, it's just ridiculous. All on the backs of the taxpayers. You know, why should we subsidize electric vehicles? Why should we, you know, why should we retrofit? I mean, it's just amazing. Advanced racial equity. I mean, it's anyway, all for infrastructure. Anyway, this could be a good sign. You got more employers that are trying to dole out some money so they can fill open job positions. You have a Maryland-based trucking company, Cohen Systems. They announced a new 5-figure signing bonus incentive for new drivers.
We're going to come back to that story, Melody, after some messages. Please stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Please make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. You know, heading into the break and doing the program by telephone is difficult because I don't always hear the cues with them when the music comes on and to take us into the break, and I'm not a clock watcher when I'm doing the program. So, but going into the break, we were talking about how these businesses across the various industries are trying to are beginning to announce five-figure signing bonuses, and Cohen Systems drivers are automatically eligible to earn at least $15,000 through the incentive plan. The company said drivers with experience and credentials can earn $17,000 or $20,000. And that's a signing bonus, right, Dave?
Lump sum up front.
Yeah. We've talked about this various times, about the trucking industry having a shortage of more than 60,000 drivers. This is all according to the American Trucking Association, their chief economist, Bob Costello. My question is, where did those 60,000 drivers go? In a year and a half, where'd they go? On the government dole. No, I don't think that. Where do 60,000 drivers go, Dave?
I think a lot of them are probably retired, some burn out, others, who knows, but it's said to be a real lonely career, a job, certainly, long distance haulers particularly, and injury prone with all of the sitting, alcohol and drug abuse takes its toll on a lot of those good people who are behind the wheel. And so I suspect it's just an industry that hasn't done a good job of succession planning. And here they were caught, with a pandemic that rapidly got out of control for them. And lo and behold, they're finding it real difficult to catch up. I don't have anything to back it up. That's just my hunches.
Well, and you know something too, we don't think about the traffic. Can you imagine how much more difficult driving a semi with the increased traffic everywhere in the past 15 years? I mean, I don't like driving cars in some areas because of the traffic. And and you know what? I don't know what they get paid. But you know what? The industry, they made it very difficult for them to make big money anymore. You know, there was so much legalities placed on them. You know, they couldn't drive, for longer than 2 hours, and this is an exaggeration, they couldn't drive longer for 2 hours, and, you know, they were being watched and timed, and, you know, they couldn't scratch their nose, you know, without, so, you know, that's probably part of it, too. They worked long, hard hours, and they had to work longer hours in order to make any money. I can remember when in the 70s, they made great money. I mean, it was big bucks to be a trucker, and until bigger companies took over, kind of pushed the independent trucker out of business, and he could no longer survive. So, anyway, that's my two cents on that industry.
I would stick with it.
Huh?
I would stick with it, too.
We talked about this yesterday, about semiconductor shortage, and we have a shortage of semiconductors in large part because of shortage of semiconductors. The chip shortage, say that three times, has entered a new phase, and the main problem during the first half of the year was a drought of wafers. But now we have more wafers. Now the problem is assembling those wafers into integrated circuits for circuit boards. And so there's a shortage of assembly equipment because the equipment, too, needs chips that are in short supply. The chip shortages' impact on vehicle manufacturing and the global economy is far-reaching. Auto plants have shut down. Newly made vehicles, sans chips, sit in parking lots. Prices for used cars and car rentals have skyrocketed. And it still baffles me, Dave, on why there is a semiconductor shortage. It just baffles me.
Well, baffled or not, Melody, there's a shortage that is expected to cut car and truck manufacturing by over 7 million vehicles this year alone. That's around the world, according to IHS Market. The recovery from that shortage is now unlikely to start before the second half of next year. So that is going to put a prolonged strain on a critical industry in the manufacturing area. But again, you know, beyond that, it's the labor shortage, too. And some are blaming the resurgence of the Delta variant in Malaysia, for example, that's a hub for chip testing and packaging. They've been on some form of lockdown off and on, mainly on, since May. So wafer manufacturing is on the mend, but they're telling us don't expect a normal car market for some time.
Well, you know, in the news is Afghanistan, and the good old G7 is voicing concerns. And I guess, weren't they supposed to meet again today, I believe, in some sort of a virtual format for their get-together on Afghanistan? And it certainly is, listening to some of those reports coming out of there, is, you know, it really is incredible that this is even happening in the manner in which it is. And the British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, the host of the June summit, he's reconvening the leaders, and the widespread unhappiness from America's allies about our handling of the withdrawal. We've seen complaints from Britain, France, Germany, and all the other G7s. And actually, that only includes one non-NATO member, Japan. So in Afghanistan, we see these desperate evacuees continue to be transported out of the country. We had a CIA director meeting with the Taliban's top political leader. And you know what? It was just, it really is a time for, it really is true that we needed to show some strength, and it really is kind of sad that we're sort of kowtowing down to the Taliban, Dave.
Well, I'm not quite sure what to say. I mean, you've got UK Defense Secretary Ben Wallace lamenting that once the U.S. troops leave the airport in Kabul, said the 1,000 British troops at the airport will be unable to keep up the operation. Don't know if that means they stick around or if they'll pack up and leave as quickly to protect those troops. Now, there's the other thing that the G7 leaders were pressuring Biden on to extend the August 31st deadline if not all of the folks who they want to be evacuated or have been evacuated by that time. Biden this afternoon apparently did come out and say, or the White House, I don't know if it's Jen Psaki or Biden himself, said that, no, we are going to stick with that August 31st deadline. Although they did say, White House officials did say that the president could opt to extend the mission beyond that into September for any number of reasons, primarily if the Taliban should stop cooperating with evacuation operations, Melody.
Russia showed the delivery of piped natural gas has slowed the delivery of piped natural gas to Europe in recent weeks, raising questions about the potential causes behind the drop and its implications for the global gas markets. And it comes shortly after German's Chancellor Merkel sought to ease the long-running concerns about the nearly completed Nord Stream 2 pipeline, saying further sanctions may be imposed if Moscow used gas as a weapon. The controversial project is designed to deliver Russia gas directly to Germany via the Baltic Sea, bypassing Ukraine and Poland. Critics argue that the pipeline is not compatible with European climate goals, increases the region's dependence on Russian energy exports, and will most likely strengthen Putin's influence over the region. And there's some analysts out there that have suggested Gazprom, which is Russia's state-owned gas giant, could be limiting the delivery of discretionary natural gas supply to Europe just to support its case in starting flows via the Nord Stream 2. And a lead European gas analyst said if there is less gas around than normal and the price is high, then it could streamline the Nord Stream approval process, Dave.
Wow. Yeah, that I think it's here's a case where it's so obvious what's going on that it tricks you into thinking, well, no, someone of Putin's stature wouldn't be that obvious. But, you know, in the lust for more market control, for the resulting financial windfall and power that brings, there's no question in my mind, Melody, that this is all a move to try and gain more support for Nord Stream 2. I think that is the future of Russia, and without it, I mean, it can survive, but the corruption that's apparently already rampant there in the highest levels of government would need to get so much more so to maintain the standards of living that Russia's elite have grown used to, whether they still live there or in the U.S. or wherever. This story is almost comical. But, you know, hey, it's certainly newsworthy. I guess the corporate newsmakers have to try and appear to be serious and throw out all of the options. It just seems like, this is, there's got to be a term for it in the spy industry for what Putin's doing. I think it's blatantly obvious.
You know, it's funny, is they don't try to hide anything anymore because no one even pays attention anymore. The only news that you ever hear is, my gosh, you know, some stations, all they run is 24/7 pandemic fear. And then the other stations, you know, will be running. All you hear is Afghanistan, what's happening over there. So, you know, any of these stations that call themselves news stations, it's pretty pathetic. Because they're anything but news anymore. So thanks for bringing that up. But yeah, it's true. It is amazing anymore, and no one pays attention to our budget. The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, their forecast is projecting government debt levels in the U.S. Hey, not seen since World War II, but who's going to talk about that? According to CBO's report released back in July, all the government's borrowing needs are accounted for. Debt held by the public rises from $21 trillion at the end of 2020 to $35 trillion at the end of 2031. Amazing. $15 trillion in 15 years. As a percentage of GDP, debt at the end of 2031 stands at 106%, about 6 percentage points higher than it was at the end of 2020, and nearly 2.5 times its average over the past 50 years. And these are just numbers now. No way are they going to hold true till we'll be double that, if not more, by 2031. So when you can look at these numbers, and they're trying to do all these, you know, projecting for government debt, Dave, I mean, it doesn't even hold a candle to what it will really be in 2031.
But yet
these are the numbers that allows them, correct me if I'm wrong, and I might probably am, but these are the numbers that they use in order to get these big ticket items done.
Well, in reality, the CBO baseline was always meant to be, and still technically is, meant to provide a view of where government spending and revenues and deficits and debt will be in the future based on no changes in current policy. So it enables
the key words
there you go. And that's how, since its founding in 1974, I guess, the CBO has provided cost estimates of proposed legislation by members of the House and Senate. Each year, each January or February, they create a new budget baseline. It's called the baseline CBO projections. And everything they estimate is based off of that. It's discouraging because the numbers are big out there, ladies and gentlemen.
And the music is big. I hear it this time. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, one more time. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other business this final segment. Call her at 1-800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets once again. This week's edition comes with a review of financial market performance last week, and it includes insightful articles from Doug Nolan of Credit Bubble Bulletin called Weary of the Experiment in Capitalism, and Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs, who writes about the pandemic and the angry world. You can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. My article in this week's edition is As Businesses Worry About COVID, They Say QE Should Go, But Powell Should Stay. As we know, sentiment of investors, traders, and plain old households can drive the day-to-day direction of markets as the players react to the headlines and other events. According to Charles Schwab's latest active trader pulse survey, the pandemic is once again the leading risk factor among traders. Respondents identified as the biggest impact on their investment decisions for the rest of 2021. COVID ranked just ahead of inflation and Fed monetary policy. Last week's Global Fund Manager Survey, published by the Too Big to Fail Bank of America, revealed that inflation and Fed tapering are the leading risks, followed closely by the spread of Delta. Jason Gopfert of Sentiment Traders said, sentiment is among the most influential factors over the short to medium term. He's talking about weeks or months, as emotion swings with headlines, economic reports, and the latest corporate news. In other words, even as the long-term fundamentals of a stock, bond, or precious metal may be strong, news headlines that amplify traders' concerns can cause prices to drop. But Dave Lutz at Jones Trading says that while he agrees that sentiment is a key driver of market volatility, that volatility may be limited when a particular concern is already well known and built into prices. He believes the biggest factor is the unknowns. He says if a bad event like the taper is seen coming down the pike, the market can digest it no problem. It's when there are unknown outcomes or events that really cause the ripple. Market strategist Michael Antonelli at Baird cautions, however, that measuring sentiment accurately isn't as simple as adding up the results of a survey. The issue is that there's no real way to measure sentiment because it's always changing as price changes. Antonelli adds, trying to use it as a market timing tool is incredibly difficult because it usually only works at the extremes. Now, on the one hand, it's often interesting to know what market participants are thinking about. On the other hand, that knowledge doesn't necessarily make the market any more predictable or less volatile, especially in a way that most traders and investors can use to their advantage. I mean, look at the National Association of Business Economics, NABE, their most recent survey of members, corporate economists, financial planners, cost analysts, and business leaders. The survey's results show that the business community's love affair with the Fed's unprecedented accommodating monetary policy may be coming to an end. The Fed's begun teasing the markets with signals it will soon announce plans to taper its monthly purchases of $120 billion in treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. That QE program was rolled out early last year to keep interest rates ultra-low and bond markets ultra-liquid. Those low rates and the ever-flowing liquidity helped corporate debt to explode to record highs last year and to be used as leverage for stock buybacks and dividends this. Now, as of earlier this month, 52% of NAB survey respondents said monetary policy is too stimulative. That's twice as much as the 26% that said so when the survey was last conducted in March. At the same time, 47% say the Fed's policy is about right, although that's down 72% from 72% in March, and no one, 0%, thinks it's too restrictive. That's down from 2% in March. Now, according to the minutes of the Fed's July policymaking meeting, most officials agreed that tapering should start by the end of 2021 if economic growth stays on track. Now, while the NAB didn't ask its members if the Fed should begin tapering this year, 52% did say the Fed will. So, speaking of the Fed, a lot more people are asking, will Jay stay or will he go? Fed Chair Jay Powell's term runs out in February. The spotlight is chewing. Fed Chair joins the Kansas City Fed's annual Jackson Hole Economic Policy Symposium remotely by Zoom on Friday, where he'll undoubtedly present his latest views of the economy on behalf of his colleagues. Every year, the KC Fed hosts dozens of prominent central bankers, finance ministers, academics, and financial market participants from around the world at its scenic, cozy Wyoming event. Besides partaking in food, wine, and occasional cigar befitting the global elite, the participants discuss economic issues, implications, and policy options related to the symposium's theme, which this year is macroeconomic policy in an uneven economy. Now, Powell's speech will likely take on added importance in light of Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen's reported endorsement of a second term for him. Several news outlets are reporting that Yellen told senior White House advisors last week that she supports reappointing Powell as Fed chair, a move that certainly increases his chance for a second term. Love him or not. Biden hasn't made a decision yet, but is said to be leaning towards announcing his choice around Labor Day, and that's just 2 weeks away. Washington observers say keeping someone viewed by Wall Street as a trusted policymaker in charge of the world's most powerful central bank would send a signal of continuity as the economy recovers from the pandemic. But those observers, I think, miss an important point. Is he, in fact, a trusted policymaker? By some, he certainly is. By others, not so sure. Recriminations of Powell having overseen a Fed that's undertaken programs with record levels of monetary easing, several of them shrouded in secrecy, at the expense of a major growth in income inequality, could just send him back to practicing law or writing his memoir. One thing's for sure. Yellen's backing, with her almost two decades of experience at the Fed and endearing herself to Wall Streeters with six-figure speeches leading up to her nomination this year as Treasury Secretary, does give Powell a leg up on his closest competitors for the chair position. Those other powerhouses include people like Fed Governor Lyle Brainard, a woman, an Atlanta Fed pres, Raphael Bostic, an African-American. Keeping a Fed chair who just so happens to be a registered Republican could also help Biden mitigate GOP efforts to use rising inflation and other, you know, Democrats in their spending plans. Critics, including Republicans like Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, and even some Democrats have said that the Fed's at risk of letting inflation get out of control for the first time in over 3 decades. To ward that off, they've urged Powell to begin pulling back on the Fed's massive bond purchases now, immediately, instead of waiting for further significant progress. If markets are prepared, volatility in stock prices in light of any tapering announcement realistically could be limited. However and whenever the Fed decides to taper, though, its mere announcement will almost certainly result in a stock market correction, if not worse, especially if stimulus recipients and investors aren't ready to see it go. Do you think they are? And does that tell you how you should be preparing for what's coming? Now, drug wars and gold manipulation. What's a precious metal investor to do? After 20 years, the longest war in U.S. history is finally coming to a close, it looks like. The war in Afghanistan's opium poppy production, however, looks set to escalate and at a potentially great expense to U.S. taxpayers. If you didn't know, Afghanistan produces a lot of the stuff. The U.N. Office on Drugs and Crime estimates that the country is responsible for 85% of global poppy supply. Much of that used to make morphine, codeine, and yes, heroin. The Taliban officially banned poppy cultivation way back in 2000, but soon realized it couldn't do without it. Poppy's an attractive insurance policy. That's according to recent Inspector General report, Department of Defense. The inspector general said it's lightweight, easy to transport, lucrative, and it can be stockpiled to await more favorable market or security conditions. In any event, since 2002, the U.S. has spent $9 billion fighting the Taliban's narcotics trafficking. Nevertheless, cultivation has continued to ramp up. Last year, the area used to grow opium poppy in Afghanistan increased 37%. From the year before. Even after U.S. airstrikes destroyed a quarter of Taliban-run poppy fields in 2018. But now that the U.S. military is on its way out, do you think things will improve in that respect? No, me neither. Billions more will be likely spent to combat poppy cultivation and exporting. It's the Taliban's number one source of financing. This is yet another reminder that U.S. taxpayers and investors need their own attractive insurance policy against freewheeling government spending and currency debasement. For our money, gold is that asset. For one, it has no counterparty risk. I mean, the more money that's printed to cover government spending, the more valuable gold becomes. Risk is precisely the reason why Palantir Technology recently decided to make a major investment in gold. We talked about the data analytics firm announcing last week that it had stockpiled as much as $50 million worth of gold bars in preparation for a future with more black swan events. What's more, Palantir, named for the all-seeing crystal balls in Lord of the Rings, is also allowing customers to pay for its software in gold. Palantir's decision is only the beginning of what will soon be major corporations diversifying their U.S. dollar cash into gold. That's according to the National Inflation Association, who wrote that statement recently. That said, Bitcoin is trending up again, while gold has continued to trade in a very narrow range since the last flash crash a few weeks ago, which saw the price fall below $1,700 for the first time since June last year. The stronger dollar bears a lot of responsibilities for gold's woes this year, to be sure, but something doesn't add up when inflation is running at 5.5% year over year, government numbers, and real rates remain in the hole, negative. By one measure, rates are lower now than they've been since 1980, the same year gold hit its all-time high when adjusted for inflation. Are investors betting that inflation will be transitory, as Jerome Powell insists, or is gold being manipulated? Well, if you talk to Chris Powell, no relation to Jay, he's Secretary of Treasury at the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, the answer to that latter question, is gold being manipulated, is an emphatic yes. Back in 2019, he said that gold is largely manipulated through the futures markets and the London over-the-counter market, particularly gold swap derivatives. And if gold is being suppressed, as CPAL and others believe, with G7 countries and central bankers continuing their modern monetary theory experiment, the spring effect has the potential to be even greater. Thus, he sees gold at $2,000 to $2,400 an ounce within a year. We believe that that could happen sooner. You know, it's hard to believe given on what a tease it's been so far. But be prepared at any event, ladies and gentlemen. Call us 1-800-375-4188. That's all the time we have for today's show. I'll return on Thursday. Melody will be back tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our producer and engineer, Todd. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks for listening to Financial Survival. And please, please be safe out there. Bye-bye. I